Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I'm Chris Clements.
And we are super honored today to have with us as a guest
a legend.
Yes. This legend. Is Senator Jim DeMint.
I'll throw it out there. I'm just going to say it.
Senator Jim DeMint, who was elected to the House in 1998, House of Representatives, and was seen as a conservative leader.
The conservatives, conservative
coming in to join the revolution of the 94 class, although it was relatively short lived, they lost the majority after a while. But he then went on to become senator in 2004, and then left being a senator to go and run Heritage Foundation.
Yeah,
and then a few years later, started Conservative Partnership Institute. Welcome, Senator. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be with you.
Well, we're honored to have you. Tell us a little bit about, we can go way back, but let's start with CPI.
Yeah. Right? I mean, let's start with what you're doing right now. I mean, we can talk about Heritage a little bit, but you know, I remember when CPI was starting, it was you and Brett Bernhardt, and you're meeting in this little room over on the House side of the Capitol. And things are just sort of getting going. And now it's become, you know, sort of the outgrowth of, the Leadership Institute in some ways as a training hub for personnel on Capitol Hill that is second to none. It's an unbelievable, incredible achievement of what you've done. And it's such a short period of time.
Well, there are a lot of aspects to CPI, but one of the things I discovered after being in the private sector, in the House and the Senate, and then spending a lot of time trying to elect new people, particularly to the Senate, that once good people got to Washington, there was really no support for being a conservative. As a matter of fact, it was very punishing if you did what you campaigned on, like try to cut spending, stop the growth of government. Very punishing. And so I realized after working in a think tank for a little while that it wasn't information that was the problem. It was that there was really no support system. So I took the best staff that I'd ever had in the House and the Senate. We started a conservative partnership to create that support system and help build a conservative movement. A big part of it was just training staff because I saw how important it was to have staff that knew how the place worked. It's important in the House. It's even more important in the Senate. So we teach parliamentary procedures. We teach how the budget process and appropriation process works, things like the Farm Bill, just help staff to learn how the place works, and that empowers their members. But we also created other assets for members of Congress. We've got a media studio that a lot of, if you see people in the Freedom Caucus on Fox or Newsmax or something else, they're probably doing that from our studios because we just found that many times they were meeting in our building. Freedom Caucus meets in our building every week. Instead of having to go across town to do an interview, they could walk downstairs and do it. And having more of a media presence is part of how we build the movement. We also tried to get all these conservative groups on the same page. Almost every week we issue some what's called a memo from the movement that all these groups sign. And it's usually in support of something that the conservatives are doing inside Congress. So from building the movement on the outside to supporting it on the inside, we just know that the people who work with us have been in the arena. Our board of directors have actually been staffers in the arena. That's who we wanted. We didn't want just people who on the board who just gave money. We wanted them to know what it was like to be in the fight. And so CPI has become, I think, the hub of the conservative movement. In a lot of ways, we've helped to start a number of other groups such as Stephen Miller's America First Legal. We helped Ben Carson get his group started, Russ Vogt. And so we have to incubate other groups with great talent instead of just growing larger ourselves. Our whole concept is built around the word partner. We don't compete or try to duplicate what other people are doing. We partner with others to make sure it gets done.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting when you look back and you look at, you know, because as a Hill staffer for Congressman Shattuck, you know, he took over as the RSC chairman when we did a really big change in the way RSC worked. It became much more of a, I think, action-oriented organization. We brought in Neil Bradley, who's now at the U.S. Chamber, Paul Teller, who's now doing stuff with Pence, Russ Vogt, as you mentioned, went on to be the CBO director, and you know, runs this work, great organization. You know, it, you just look at, and you were a part of RSC, and they're just, Pence was a chairman of RSC after Shattuck, and Meadows was a part of RSC, and then Freedom Caucus. I mean, it's just interesting how there is a timeline of the movement, which is historic. And it's kind of cool when you look at someone like yourself, who came in 98, and then you fast forward to 2023. You've been a touch point in the conservative movement for many, many years. How, when you ran for Congress, I got to believe that that probably was not what was on your mind, right? I mean, talk to us about how you went from, you know, you're running you were in advertising marketing research. You worked for Bob Inglis on his campaign, I think back in like 94, 96.
No, he actually ran in 92.
For 92, that's right.
Yeah. He got there a couple of years before the big 94 election. But and I just backed into politics. I really had no interest, never really thought about running for office. I thought they were normal people, and then there were politicians.
Right.
And kind of stay on the normal side. But, you know, as I developed my business, as I got involved with the community and worked in my church, raised a family, it just became apparent to me how much policy, government policy, affected our lives. And in many cases, a lot of the problems we were trying to deal with in our community were caused by bad policy, particularly policy from the federal level. And so I got more interested in how this affects me. And I've always been a volunteer with a lot of charitable groups in the Chamber and United Way. And so I was kind of already in this community service mindset. And I volunteered to help really free of charge Bob Inglis run. I hardly knew him, but, you know, he was running on term limits and not taking PAC money and kind of a lot of these revolutionary ideas. And so he wasn't supposed to get elected. He was running against a very popular incumbent. So after he won, everyone considered me a political genius, even though I think we ran the whole campaign on $50,000 and a lot of door-to-door work.
Wow, imagine that.
He was term limited, and about halfway through his 6 years, the group that worked with him, we just started, okay, what are we going to do to keep this going? And the lot kind of fell on me, and I just decided to give it a shot and ended up in a 7-way primary, because anytime you have an open seat in South Carolina, it becomes very crowded with Republicans.
Right.
So somehow I managed to get through that. And I just found I enjoyed the service. The Washington moved a whole lot slower than I had hoped. But I'd still believe we can nudge the country in the right direction, but it's going to take a fight. I think that's what a lot of people don't understand, is the country is going in the wrong direction. We're really in serious trouble, particularly fiscally and culturally, and from a defense perspective as well right now. And you can't change it without a fight, because the status quo has its advocates, and they're all around Washington as well as all the state houses. And so if people think that you can go and actually save this country without a very ugly fight, they shouldn't be running for office right now, because they make you look real bad, just like they did the Freedom Caucus guys during the speaker's fight. They made it look like they were the problem. But the fact is, they were fighting for something to make the House work better. And yeah. and they stood their ground and they got what they fought for. And now Democrats and Republicans are taking credit for a more open process right. in the House.
I was just going to say that we did a podcast on that with Congressman Biggs. And one of the things that we were talking about was there's going to be a lot of Democrats who are going to like this more open and transparent process, too. And they're probably secretly rooting for the conservatives to get what they need.
Yeah. Well, but they got beat up. A lot of, you know, some of them were called and some of their donors said they'd never give to them again. Mm-hmm. And then we've had donors tell us if we're going to be associated with the Freedom Caucus, they're not going to give us money, but they're usually people who wouldn't give us money anyway. So right. you just have to decide if you're going to go along with the system or you're going to fight it. And most people don't have the stomach or the will to really just take the abuse. And that's part of what we want to do, is make sure that if you're up there fighting, that there's somebody that's got your back. And that's my passion right now, is to get the backs of those who are willing to fight for this country.
Yeah, well, and you come by that honestly, yeah. because you were a fighter in the House. You were obviously a fighter in the Senate. You were alone a lot of the time. I mean, maybe it was you and Coburn, but that was probably it. I mean, he was a true believer. But when you went to Heritage, I think you probably learned pretty quickly. You already knew, but even after being at Heritage, and I think you started Heritage Action, got that going.
And got a lot of criticism for that.
Yeah.
Because Heritage was actually taking the fight, to use your words, you know, out into the population and trying to pick winners and losers.
Yeah,
is that a valid assessment?
Well, it is, and just that. I mean, you're just going to have to put some horsepower behind it, and it's kind of hard to mix that with the think tank model. But think tanks alone, you know, they were started when there wasn't an internet, and it was hard to get information. Pretty much, I can get the best of every think tank in a few minutes with an intern sitting at a computer now. So. Putting all your resources there now does not make a lot of sense. But we're creating a campus two blocks from Capitol Hill. And we've got places where there can be office space for these new groups we start and others who want to be part of this coalition. Texas Public Policy has its Washington office in our campus. And the whole idea is just to create more critical mass. So it'll be cool to be a conservative. I mean, we have a retreat that one of our donors actually gave us, that we can take staff, give them a day or two of intensive training and help them build a camaraderie and network with each other. And by training all these different staff, we have allies in almost every Republican office now. And some of these conservative staffers end up in some of the not so conservative offices, and that helps move these members in a positive direction, too. So I feel like I'm making more of a difference than I ever have before. But it's a fight. And particularly with this administration and this Justice Department, I mean, they're after us all the time. I mean, a lot of our folks have, you know, had to deal with subpoenas and threats and it's just not easy, but that's something all of us know. If we're going to save the country, we're going to have to be willing to roll up our sleeves and start throwing some punches.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because it is a contact sport, and it's never been more challenging to be engaged in the fight than it is right now, because it can be frustrating with how vitriolic it is in comparison to years gone past. But I think it's more important than ever, because as you point out, I mean, the country is further along in the decline than we've been in generations, and if maybe ever. And it is a deep concern. What advice do you give to people? I mean, we have a bunch of listeners who are involved in politics, but we also have a bunch of listeners who just kind of passively listen to politics. But what advice would you give to people as they think about how they can make America a better place? I mean, you live up to the Reagan ideal of a shining city on a hill, and that we are a place of freedom and prosperity.
Yeah. Well, we need to remember, and I'm afraid a lot of people use this word democracy a lot there. America's not a democracy and mm-hmm. never intended to have a national government and a popular elected president. A lot of the action is at the local and state level. And that's why we help start State Freedom Caucus Network. And that's why we work with a lot of state policy groups. Is I would just encourage people, Arizona is a critical state for the country. We've got to do more to fix the election system there. And we've got to make sure that good people are engaged in the process. I mean, it always amazes me to find out how many good Americans don't bother to vote, particularly those in Christian churches. I mean, this is a spiritual battle. I think we're starting to see an attack on a Christian faith because there are some morals, there are some right and wrongs, and a lot of people don't like that type of accountability. So we need to fight these battles locally in our churches and our schools, our school boards, at the state level. At the national level, just trying to stay involved. I know if folks listen to your show, they're going to find out a little bit more behind the scenes of what really goes on, because you've been there and you can translate a lot of the stuff, the smoke that they blow, so that people don't really know what's going on. You know that some of these are fake votes and they didn't intend to pass it. They just wanted a messaging amendment, as right. they call it. Not too many people on the air really know how the place works enough to keep people informed. So I'm very grateful for folks like you that can help explain it to people. But we need an informed electorate, and we need people to realize that part of their stewardship, if they are a person of faith, needs to be to take care of this wonderful garden called America that God gave us. And it's going to take a fight. And today, like you said, it's really harder a lot because of social media. You can be blasted within a few minutes. And there are a lot of trolls that probably follow your name, my name. You say one thing that all of a sudden they're twisting it and blasting it out. They can do a lot of damage to an individual. But I mean, you at least have a microphone, and which is a platform to fight back. You know, I've got a little bit of a platform as a senator in what I do now. So it's just hard for a private citizen, particularly a student at a university, to take the risk of speaking the truth and get hammered by these trolls. It doesn't take very many of them to make your life miserable. And I think that's what's happening to a lot of people, is that they're intimidated. They shut up. A lot of corporate CEOs are just rather, you know, they want to manage the risk. So they go with the woke rather than what they know is right. We've got a big hole to dig out of. I'm encouraged. After generations of schools teaching the wrong thing and what's going on in corporate America, what's going on in the media, that you still got about half the population that's going to vote for more conservative, traditional American type of candidates. So America has a heart for freedom. And I think all we need to do is try to get the truth out. But I'd just be grateful for anyone who's involved and wants to make a difference, whether it's at the local or state or the federal level.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. Well, and I think you hit on something that it was super, it just struck me, is that the gift that America is from God. I mean, literally, this is a gift from God. And we have a obligation to do what we can to protect it.
But what you're saying is a radical statement
in today's world. I mean, some people will see it as radical.
Especially just, what happened this week in Nashville.
Yeah.
It's a hugely radical statement, because there are people in this world who absolutely want to reject that idea, and they're trying to steer the country against that idea completely, down to its very core. And it's guys like you, Senator, and organizations like CPI and others who are, you know, trying to stand athwart of history, to use, you know, a paraphrase of William F. Buckley. And so how do we, you know, where do we go from here? How do we fight those battles, both in the schools and the culture? Because Because when you have something like what happened this week and the spin that's happened this week towards, you know, the untruth, it can be discouraging to conservatives, number one. Like, how do we fight this battle?
Well, it is discouraging. If you get in the fight, you're always going to hear whispers that that you're overwhelmed, the odds are against you, there's no end game. But part of stewardship is just to be faithful. You're not always called to win, and I've certainly lost a lot of the battles myself. But occasionally we're surprised. We get a victory. We move things in a positive direction. We certainly saw under the Trump administration that his policies proved a lot of the conservative common sense ideas actually make life better for every American, mm-hmm. despite what we've been hearing from the left. And that's the whole idea of conservatism to me, is just preserving those things that work, that make life better for everyone. And that to me seems like a reasonable thing for all of us to go out and try to discover what are those ideas, how do we preserve them, how do we make them work for future challenges. And I think if you can speak to people on those terms, most people start nodding with you, is if we're looking for something that'll make their life better and hopefully their children and grandchildren as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it is an ongoing battle. And your talk about the trolls, I think one of the things that we have to do is just accept that they're going to be out there, but we need to push back. There aren't as many as we would think. And so much of this is our bots as well.
Yeah, and being fearful of it is not a good strategy.
What, Senator? I appreciate your time, and we've got to wrap this up. But one thing I wanted to ask, just as and maybe it's a little bit of levity, but what is the best memory you have from being in either the House or the Senate, and then what's the funniest experience that you had? and maybe it's the same thing.
The funniest, and I kind of knew it would happen sooner or later, is that I was led by my staff over, I think, this big meeting in the Capitol Hill Club. I was supposed to go address this group. They led me into the room. I went up to the front to speak, started speaking, and someone came up and whispered to me I was in the wrong meeting. And so I'm glad I finally got that over with, because I kind of knew it was going to happen sooner or later with the way you rushed around. I think one of the most fun things I ever did, and our CEO now is Ed Corrigan. He used to run the steering committee, and he was on the floor with me, and we started fighting this amnesty bill that Bush actually pushed. And we only had like two or three people who were standing with us. They just said we had no chance of winning because we had a Republican president. All the Democrats were going to support it. They said it had border security like they always do, but it didn't. All it did was create an amnesty bill for then and in the future. So we were fighting that and using all the procedures we could. We had offered an amendment and they were going to table it. But we worked out the strategy. They didn't have enough votes to table this particular amendment. And what it meant is that they couldn't go any further with the bill. And I was on the floor. Harry Reid was there. And all of a sudden, he realized it was checkmate, basically. He had to pass a particular amendment in order for the Republicans to the kind of the moderates were going to vote for it if they got this amendment. It was kind of a fake amendment, but they had all pledged they weren't going to vote for this amnesty bill unless it passed. But they could not pass that amendment. They needed 60 votes to do it. And so there I was looking across at Harry Reid. And I always kind of appreciated him because he's an old boxer. He didn't stab you in the back. He always just hit you right in the face. And so I was used to losing to Harry, but he just kind of had his head down. One of his staff whispered in his ear. He just looked up across at me and he smiled. And they kind of adjourned for the day. It may have been for the week, but we won that battle. We stopped that bill. And so Harry and I always kind of had a good relationship after that. He read my book, Saving Freedom, and I read his book about how good socialism is. He's an old And but we had a couple of good conversations on the floor, but he was a mean old feisty guy, and you can't beat somebody like that if you're not willing to take a few punches and throw a few back.
Boy, that's a great example of being in the
fight. He was a mean old feisty guy.
Because that's a great way to put it. I mean, he was a master, and if you weren't willing to take a few punches to stay in there with it, I think that's a great example, Senator.
Who do you see in the Senate these days as taking the fight to the other side? Who gives you the most hope?
I got some new ones that came in, but the folks who've kind of been holding their own since I left, Mike Lee and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, Ron Johnson is kind of joined that. Some are still trying to find their place. You know, Tommy Tuberville, he came over for a lot of training. He's figuring out how the places work, and that's how he's able to kind of hold these nominees in order to get the Pentagon to cut off their funding of abortions. And
right.
So this group has gotten a little bigger. Josh Hawley has shown some life over there. And some of them are just, as all of us have to do, is trying to decide, can I get more done working with the system, or am I going to have to fight the system? And eventually you're going to have to fight the system, because it's what's going in the wrong direction.
Right.
And what I found out is when you fight the system by yourself, it's almost always going to win. And even worse than losing is sometimes they can marginalize you to the point where you can never be effective again. And so I want to make sure when they go into fights, and they're doing this more and more, they're signing up to kind of go in together, kind of like the Freedom Caucus does.
Right.
We don't quite have a Freedom Caucus in the Senate, but we're working on that. And we've got some new leadership over there that are finding their sea legs, so to speak. And I'm optimistic. I think as long as we have the current leadership, we're not going to get anything done very bold in the Senate. It's just something about being in leadership, particularly in the Senate, is if you want to lead, you don't, as Mitch McConnell says, don't be the issue. In other words, don't do anything somehow. And I'm not pretending it's easy to get Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski together with Ted Cruz and Mike Lee.
Right.
And sometimes you have to cobble all this together. But the fact is, the whole time I was there, we tended to dumb down what we did as Republicans to meet Olivia Snowe and the others who were really on the Democrat side. And what the Freedom Caucus does in the House is show the Republican leadership that they can win with conservative ideas if they're just willing to stand together and fight. And so we're trying to do that in the Senate. There is some hope there, but we can't solve the problem with the same people who created it. That was my slogan when I started Senate Conservatives Fund. And we need to elect some folks who are willing to take the punches and not become part of the club there in the Senate.
Yeah, well said. Good. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. We really, really appreciate your leadership.
Yeah, it's always good to see you, sir.
And
I thought you'd be serving beer or something.
Yeah, well.
Well, Chris, look, I'm the dark money guy. I'll bring all the dark money I can to the table, but Chris has got to bring the beer.
That's kind of the joke of the name of the show. We kind of have left some of that behind.
I'm kind of an IPA guy, but you had me at beer.
Yeah.
Well, let's just put it this way. Chris is the more popular side of this duo.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, but thank you both.
Senator, we appreciate the work that you're doing. We appreciate your friendship over the years, and the movement is in a better place because of CPI.
Yeah,
for sure.
Agreed.
CPI.org. Come see us. Sign up for our emails. We'd love to keep you posted on what's going on.
Great. And I am going to come see you later on this month, and we are talking about coming to see you maybe in May or June.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I'm sure
doing some live broadcasting from your studio.
Yep. You plan on it.
Okay.
Thank you,
great.
Okay. All right. God bless
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Take care.